Welcome to Everyday Miracles with Candace McClain, opening your mind to unlimited possibilities. Inspirational, compelling stories from leading transformers who motivate you to overcome the odds, break down barricades, and shift your beliefs, emerging stronger than ever. Share in the journey and find a new path full of miracles waiting to be discovered. Now, here's your host, Candace McClain.
Hello and welcome to Everyday Miracles. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today because we have an incredible show for you. Randall Sullivan, the co-host of the Miracle Detectives on the Oprah Winfrey Network, will be joining us to talk about his experiences investigating miracles as well as sharing his own personal miracle. So you don't want to miss that. It's going to be a fabulous show today. But before I bring Randall out, I again just want to thank all of you, all those of you who've sent in your miracle stories to me. I do receive one every now and then, and it's really been an honor to read them. You know, I've said it on the show before, I think even among skeptics, there is an openness to miracles because they are all around us. You know, there are things that have taken place that we simply can't put words to, and probably the most common is the inexplicable healings that really go beyond medical convention. So I still want to receive more stories. If you have a miracle story to share, please feel free to send it my way. You can go to my website, www.everydaymiraclesshow.com, and click on the contact link. I'd just love to hear your story. And also, if you have a story or you'd like to ask a question today on the air, you certainly may. You can call us on our toll-free line at 1-800-930-2819. That's 1-800-930-2819 if you have a question for Randall or a story you'd like to share. You can also fill out our instant feedback form, and that's on the Transformation Network website at www.transformationtalkradio.com. You can just enter in your name, your location, and your question, and I'll be able to read it right on the air. Well, allow me to introduce our special guest today. Randall Sullivan is one of the most esteemed and well-respected journalists and authors of our time. He was a contributing editor to Rolling Stone magazine for over 20 years, and he's won several national awards for his contributions as a columnist and journalist. He's also the author of three exceptional books, all nominated for the Pulitzer Prize, including his book, The Miracle Detective. And this was an amazing book. I just read it. And he sets out to explore how the Catholic Church investigates holy visions. And in the course of his journey and investigation, he discovers his own miracle and faith along the way. So it's a beautifully fascinating story that I highly encourage you to read. But you may know him best from his show, The Miracle Detectives. And in a way, that's perhaps an extension of his own experiences. He travels the globe as a believer, investigating miracles, along with Indre Viscontis, who's a gifted scientist and skeptic as well. And together they investigate some very bizarre, but at the same time very fascinating cases. So, for example, there was one there that I saw of a young boy whose parents believed was the reincarnated soul of a World War II pilot. And there's been some fascinating shows. You really need to check it out. You can, of course, go to www.oprah.com/OWN for the Oprah Winfrey Network and find out when the show is playing in your area. But Randall and Indre make a great team. One is a believer and one is a skeptic. And they gather the critical information they need to try and answer, you know, that ultimate question. Is this, in fact, a miracle? Randall, welcome to the show and thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
I'm curious, what constitutes a miracle in your eyes? I mean, what are some of the criteria that you personally apply to deem something a miracle?
Well, I began with the standard Catholic definition of a miracle, which is an extraordinary intervention of God. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you can just say simply something that can't be easily explained or readily explained by science. But for me, you know, I think a miracle became something, an extraordinary event that changes people's lives. And I look at the effect on people as much as I do at the event itself.
Absolutely. What would you say, or would you say that discovery is sort of a central aspect of both science and the spiritual path?
Discovery, revelation. I think you can find revelation in science just as you can in faith. But it's obviously a very different experience.
Yeah, yeah. Now, from what I understand, you were not brought up religious at all. Yet, at some point, the Virgin Mary sightings in Eastern Oregon precipitated a long journey and investigation for you into the miraculous. Can I ask, what was it about the sightings of the Virgin Mary there that piqued your interest?
Some of it probably had to do with the time in my life, a certain openness to spirituality, although it was very vague. I mean, I still was not a believer in any sense. But there was also something about that event. It had happened so publicly. A lot of people claimed to have had this experience, and I started asking, so was this a mass hallucination? Are these people lying? Or did something happen? And I saw that there was some report that the church was going to investigate this event. It considered it worthy of investigation. So with a fairly skeptical attitude, but with a curiosity, I went out to meet the young woman who was at the center of that whole event, and I was really impressed by her. She made no claims for herself. She wasn't trying to get anything or accomplish anything. She seemed really overwhelmed and confused and curious about what had taken place, and I could see the effect on her and on those around her, and I had a sense that, you know, something really remarkable had happened, and there were enough other elements that were curious. And I mean, this one that really struck me was there was a peach tree that had been just about dead where this vision had taken place the year before. It had just put out a few leaves and died back. Right after that, this event took place, the peach tree flowered enormously and gave off fruit for months, and buckets of fruit, and people thought it was a holy tree, but was actually seeing the tree and seeing the effect on people who had, remembered that it was virtually dead before. Those kinds of things made an impression.
Yeah.
And I happened to be there, and it was a young man who was dying of AIDS and supposedly he came to look at this painting where the vision of Mary had taken place. And he claimed that he could still see it. And it was interesting. There were a few young children who said they could still see it, too. But it was always someone who was either very ill or very young. And the whole thing just made me immensely curious.
And so then that really led you to travel to the Vatican even to learn more about how the church validates a miracle. So what did you find? What is the criteria that they use? And are there many events that they've authenticated as miraculous?
Because the church insists on scientific validation of a miracle, it restricts they're restricted mainly to medical miracles. Virtually every miracle that the Catholic Church has validated in the past two centuries has been medical. There was only one miracle that was not medical in nature that was approved by the Vatican.
Okay. And I imagine that this process takes quite some time.
It does.
Yeah.
Because the church, follows the person who reports the miracle, they follow that person's life and the effects of that life and the influence they have on other people. But they also tend to take, the ultra-skeptical view of these events, for their own protection, so that they will wait and watch for decades to see if there's a recurrence of the condition, if it's a disease, or if medicine discovers some explanation. So it rarely is anything approved as a miracle, in less than 50 or 100 years.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm sure that there are people making fraudulent claims out there as well, so they need to take those precautions.
Well, that's true. There are frauds, and there are also people, who are having some sort of hysterical experience. And there's also cases where the the purported miracle cure has an alternative explanation. It really, you can't prove it's not a miracle. In fact, in many cases, it still looks more like a miracle. But if they come up with even a plausible explanation, they won't call it a miracle.
Because really, science can only disprove. It really can't prove anything. It can only disprove.
That's correct.
And so it's interesting then that that you got to kind of investigate that and see how they do that, because this goes right from their scientists right through to the Pope, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I mean, I wasn't a Catholic, and so to be granted the level of admission to the inner sanctums was, that was one of the many remarkable things that happened on this journey. And it was, a series of events that you could call coincidence, or you could experience, as I did, as something directed, as if, I mean, I really felt as if I was being called or compelled forward.
Yes.
Doors kept opening, and I'd step through the door, and then another door would open. And maybe it was just I was there at the right moment, the right moment for me, the right moment for them. But they really opened things up to me in a way that they rarely do, even to one of their own.
Yeah,
and
absolutely
it was odd,
incredible.
It would be odd things. I met this fairly high-ranking Vatican official who was, when I met him, he was in all of his vestments, and, it was a very formal setting, and somehow it came up that I'd written for Rolling Stone. He said, "Oh, did you write?" And he named the article, and I said, "Yeah." And he said, "I love that. I've been reading your stuff for years."
Oh, that's incredible. Well, Randall, we're just going to take a quick break, but after the break, of course, we're going to have Randall back. He's going to share his personal life-changing spiritual journey with us. We'll be right back.
Are you waiting for a miracle to turn your life around? Look no further. Join Candace McLean, a clinical hypnotherapist, speaker, writer, and host of Everyday Miracles, opening your mind to unlimited possibilities. Hear inspirational, compelling stories from leading transformers who've overcome the odds, broken down barricades, and shifted their beliefs, emerging stronger than ever. Let their journeys motivate you and see your life open up in a whole new way. Candace offers a fresh blend of insight, powerful strategies to change your deeply rooted beliefs, and plenty of laughter along the way. Come share in the journey. Tune in Thursdays at 2 p.m. Pacific and 5 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com for Everyday Miracles, where a new path full of miracles is just waiting to be discovered. Everyday Miracles, opening your mind to unlimited possibilities.
Reservage Organics offers you the most advanced anti-aging product available. Our organic-based resveratrol formula, brought to you from the heart of our exclusive vineyards in southern France, has been clinically proven to reactivate your longevity gene and help preserve your youth. By including Reservage Resveratrol in your daily regimen, you can enhance cardiovascular function, metabolism, mental acuity, and collagen production. If you want to regain your youthful radiance and enhance your longevity, do so with the world's finest resveratrol from Reservage Organics. Why wait? Visit your local retailer and start the anti-aging process today. Reservage Organics, committed to the extension of youth naturally. Available online at reservage.com and at the Vitamin Shop, Vitamin World, and Whole Foods Market. Visit reservage.com and feel vitality today.
Hi, I'm Paul Bland. Did you know there is only one truly perfect food protein produced by nature? It can bring dramatic results to your health, your appearance, and overall performance. Introducing Action Whey. No other protein supplement on the market has been able to achieve the incredible health benefits of Action Whey while still achieving a taste that is better than a malt shop shake. Action Whey, for the way nature intended. Visit seaandearth.com. That's seaandearth.com for more information.
Thank you. And welcome back to Everyday Miracles. I'm your host, Candace McLean, and today I'm speaking with award-winning writer Randall Sullivan. He is a co-host of The Miracle Detective, which airs on the Oprah Winfrey Network. And if you have a question for Randall, you can call us toll-free at 1-800-930-2819, or as I said earlier, you can fill out our instant feedback form at www.transformationtalkradio.com. Well, Randall, as I mentioned earlier, I had just read The Miracle Detective, and in it you recount your journey to Bosnia, where you interviewed the original six people who claimed to see and communicate with the Virgin Mary since the time that they were teenagers. In fact, I believe they still communicate with her today, do they not?
Yes, in different ways and at different times.
Okay.
The daily events have ended for most of them, but not all.
Right. What was, and I know you went there and you investigated that, what was the message that the Virgin Mary most wanted to relay to the people?
Well, at most Marian apparition sites, the apparition comes in some particular guise or you know, with this particular intent, and there she identified herself, according to the visionaries, as the Queen of Peace. The mm-hmm. visions began just before the war broke out in Bosnia, and in the very first appearance, according to these young visionaries, she was pleading for people to reconcile with one another and, you know, to overcome their divisions and, you know, make peace. Of course, that didn't happen.
Right, right. So when you went there, what were your feelings about the six witnesses or the six visionaries upon meeting them? I mean, did you immediately believe them?
Well, I was really got to know best and spent the most time with one of them, Mariana, who was a little bit different than the others. The other five basically are Bosnian peasants. I mean, they grew up in this very, very rural village. She had been there visiting from Sarajevo. She grew up in a much more cosmopolitan family. She was college educated and really cut from different cloth. And it was, you know, it was truly a series of events I couldn't understand that led to me going there. And I had an invitation to stay in her home. So, so I got to know her far better. But she immediately, you know, made me as a skeptic, you know, and we had actually, I'd just gotten to spend time with Bichkut, who to me is the other most impressive among these visionaries, and I'd been very affected by it, but I came back sort of trying to snap out of it and got into a bit of a dispute with Mariana about the fact that I wasn't being open enough to faith. I hadn't climbed them. They have the principal geographic feature of the place is what's called Križevac, which is Cross Mountain. And part of going there is to, you know, climb the mountain to the giant cross and have whatever experience you have. And I'd been there for, I think, 3 days, 4 days, and I hadn't climbed the mountain. And she started demanding to know why I hadn't done that. And, well, I was going to get around to it. And the discussion became so heated that she basically told me to leave. She threw me out. So that was what precipitated, you know, my main event in Medjugorje.
And you mentioned there that the one, was her name Vichka? Is that how you say it?
Vichka.
Yeah.
She is one of the simple peasant women, but she's still one of the most formidable people I've ever met. And I was overwhelmed by the experience of meeting her, even though we spent most of the time just sitting together in silence.
Yeah, because I recall that you became, in your own words, incapable of speech just in being with her. What was it about her that struck you so deeply?
Her calm, you know, I mean, I couldn't see even the slightest doubt or self-consciousness in her.
Yeah.
And absolutely secure in her faith. And it seemed like every question I was asking, you know, seemed more and more inane to me. I mean, because it was off the point. I was asking, you know, an investigative journalist questions instead of questions that were related to my own experience, and she was steering it back to me. And at some point, it just seemed like it just seemed stupid to keep asking questions.
And yeah.
So she said, "Look, I promised you an hour, so we'll just sit here." Mm-hmm. So we just sat there. And I thought about whether I had anything worth asking, and it just didn't seem as if I did. So I just sat there with her, and it was a profound experience. I mean, it became like, you know, praying together. And I felt her praying for me. I mean, this poor lost soul.
Really, it's quite incredible what they went through, because at the time when they originally saw these Marian visions, they were teenagers, and really they were subjected to some cruel treatment. They were considered frauds.
What the communist authorities did to them, and the fact that they withstood it, you know, was immensely impressive to me when I learned it all. I mean, and I, you know, that took time. I mean, to actually get into the archives and to talk to the people in the village and understand what it was like. But you have to remember, this happened in the Yugoslavia of Tito, and any expression, public expression of religion or religious faith or mysticism was, you know, unlawful. And they did everything they could to discourage these kids, threatening their families, threatening them. You know, they did things like take them to an insane asylum, which was a form of punishment in that country, and told them that this is where we're going to put you. They took them to a morgue to try to give them shock therapy by showing them dead bodies. They you know, guarded their houses. They tried to keep them isolated and separate from one another. I mean, they tried to lure them off with, you know, on some vacation far beyond anything that their families could afford. And at every turn, these kids, you know, held true. And continued to say that this is what they were experiencing. And, it's a really inspiring story. And as I began to understand it, you know, I couldn't help but be humbled by the courage.
It really is. They never once wavered, you know, in that they held their conviction. You know, fear never stopped them. So have you noticed the same sense of conviction among the various witnesses you've investigated, whether it's through your show or through, you know, in Oregon? Have you noticed that same conviction?
You know, it certainly varies from person to person, and you see people struggling with it in different ways. And I know I haven't seen anything quite as as powerful as what I saw in Bosnia, but I see each person, just like I have, struggling with, you've had this profound experience and the world wants to talk you out of it in a way. And you know, you have to make a choice about whether to hold true. And most people, at least the ones I've interviewed in connection to the show, ultimately choose to hold true, even if it costs them something in the world. But,
right.
You know, there are people who have these profound experiences and are still struggling with them. The fireman who survived the collapse of the World Trade Center towers on 9/11, you know, I think on one hand they believe that they were the recipient of a miracle, and you know, it's a great miracle story. But for them to accept that, they have to work out, well, then why did all these other people die? Why didn't they get a miracle? What, you know, what? There's nothing special about me. Why was I chosen? And so there's a certain limbo that. It's not a waffling, but they have to struggle with their doubts. And in Medjugorje, the people, I mean, their doubts were overwhelmed by their faith to a degree I haven't seen.
And I understand that, you know, there were sometimes 25,000 people up there hoping to see, you know, the same vision that the children saw.
Yeah, many times. I mean, the crowds grew and grew and grew into tens of thousands, and many people did have really profound experiences, and I was really affected by those, even though they weren't seeing visions. But there was a young man named Jozo Astić, who was a champion sprinter. He was, you know, they were grooming him for the Olympics, and he wanted to go to the site. I think it was the second or third day, and he and a group of men began to run up the hillside after these kids as they were going to meet the Virgin, and they saw these kids begin to take these enormous bounding steps. I mean, they were covering 12, 15, 20 feet at a time, and this sprinter and these grown men were falling further and further behind. They couldn't keep up with these kids, and when they finally got up the hill, they were all, you know, in tears, sobbing at what they'd just seen.
Absolutely miraculous. Well, we're going to take another quick break. You're listening to Everyday Miracles, and we're going to have more with Randall Sullivan when we get back.
Are you waiting for a miracle to turn your life around? Look no further. Join Candace McClain, a clinical hypnotherapist, speaker, writer, and host of Everyday Miracles, opening your mind to unlimited possibilities. Hear inspirational, compelling stories from leading transformers who've overcome the odds, broken down barricades, and shifted their beliefs, emerging stronger than ever. Let their journeys motivate you and see your life open up in a whole new way. Candace offers a fresh blend of insight, powerful strategies to change your deeply rooted beliefs, and plenty of laughter along the way. Come share in the journey. Tune in Thursdays at 2 p.m. Pacific and 5 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com for Everyday Miracles, where a new path full of miracles is just waiting to be discovered. Everyday Miracles, opening your mind to unlimited possibilities.
Ladies, are you living an inspired life? Do you yearn for a more passionate, dream-filled life? Here's Linda Joy, founder of Aspire Magazine, and she has a gift for you.
Aspire has launched its Mission to Inspire initiative with a commitment to give away 100,000 one-year digital subscriptions to women around the globe. Every subscription comes with a multitude of free gifts from our team inspiration partners.
To claim it all, go to AspireMag.net today. No purchase necessary. And live an inspired life.
And welcome back to Everyday Miracles. Today we're speaking with Randall Sullivan, renowned writer and the believer on the show The Miracle Detectives, which airs on the Oprah Winfrey Network. Randall, what day and time can people catch the show?
It really varies from market to market.
And, okay.
And we did the original run of episodes already, so now it's repeats, which they air at irregular times, often on Sunday mornings, I've noticed.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well. So people can just go to www.oprah.com/OWN for Oprah Winfrey Network, and you can, you know, certainly take a look on there as well, and then check your local listings as well. And if you'd like to learn more about Randall and his journey, I highly recommend his book, The Miracle Detective. And of course, you can get that online even at Amazon.com. Randall, before we move on to your journey, which I'd love for you to share with us, the six visionaries claim that the Virgin Mary has given them some information or insight that they cannot share with the world. How do you feel about that?
I'd say that was the aspect of Medjugorje that I struggled with most and still probably have the most skepticism about. I mean, what they describe as is 10 secrets that they were given that are essentially about the end of the world as we know it. Mm-hmm. And their story is that, and interestingly, Mariana, the one I was staying with, is the main keeper of the secrets and the one who will reveal the secrets when it's time, supposedly. Basically, these secrets will begin to unfold. What will happen is when all six of them know all 10 secrets, then the secrets will begin to unfold. And Mariana loosely told me what the secrets were. I mean, not really what they were, but mm-hmm. what they meant and what the consequences would be. And it's essentially an apocalyptic scenario, although she did say it won't be the end of the world, it will be the end of time.
And out of curiosity, what position does the Vatican hold about everything that happened there? Do they consider the sightings a true miracle?
Well, the Vatican takes a long time before it, as I said earlier, before it approves something.
Yeah.
But oddly enough, Medjugorje has really been protected in a way that nothing else in church history really has been by the Vatican. The local officials, the local bishop, there's a real tension between the Franciscans and the local bishop that's existed there for centuries. It has to do with history in the Balkans, which is very complex. But and Medjugorje is a Franciscan village. I mean, the Franciscans attend there, so the local bishops wanted to condemn. Two separate bishops have tried to condemn Medjugorje as false, and both times the Vatican has intervened. And actually, Pope John Paul II personally intervened to prevent it from being condemned, and the current Pope Benedict has as well, and basically said, we, the Vatican, are taking over. So they haven't issued a ruling, but they've refused to allow it to be condemned, and both have said very favorable things about Medjugorje. So that's its status, its official status.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you traveled there, you had a life-changing spiritual journey of your own. Can you tell us about your experience and what that meant to you?
My experience was many-layered and complex, but it certainly the most dramatic experience happened fairly early on, basically a continuation of the story of being thrown out of Mariana's house on a blisteringly hot day. It was about 100 degrees, and which was part of the reason that there was no one else, you know, climbing the mountain that day, because no one was crazy enough to be on it. I actually wasn't even planning to climb the mountain. I just started walking, you know, and sort of fuming, and saw that I was headed toward the mountain. I thought, well, fine, I'll climb it if that's, you know.
And this wasn't an easy hill to climb or mountain to climb either. There were all kinds of thorn bushes and all kinds of things.
It's certainly been easier now than it was back when. But yeah, I mean, it's fairly rugged. It's rocks and thorn bushes and. It was a blisteringly hot day. I was wearing just a tank top and shorts with hiking boots, and dripping sweat within seconds. You know, climbing up the hill, and then suddenly, you know, easily the most amazing meteorological event I've ever observed. This clouds just began to mass right over the top of the mountain. This knot of dark purplish black clouds, and they moved in so fast I was just stunned by it, and it seemed like within seconds they were just pouring. I mean, lightning strikes were unbelievable. Lightning strikes were coming out of the sky and hitting the ground not that far from me. The thunder would just, you know, it shook me to my core. I was just overwhelmed. I had this overwhelming sense of this is about me, and, you know, my cynicism and scorn for all of this, and I'm getting, you know, I had this feeling that, you know, well, I'm going to get my due, and I realized if I was about to be, you know, destroyed, and because there was no one else on the mountain, so who could it be for?
Yeah.
So I was shaken to my core, but I just kept walking up the mountain with a sort of fatalistic attitude of, well, what will be will be. I mean, I guess I have this coming, but I still was very scared, and by then starting to get cold, wet and cold, and and then suddenly I rounded a corner. The climb of the mountain was laid out in Stations of the Cross, and as I rounded a corner, I heard singing in French, and I had no idea what this was, and I moved toward it, and I came to one of the Stations of the Cross, the fourth station, and there were a group of nuns on their knees singing in French, I was just enormously comforted by the company and by just a kind of peace that emanated from the group. So I moved next to them and just felt, you know, since they were on their knees praying, I felt compelled to get down on my own knees. And that was the first time I'd ever done that. And, you know, pray for, in my case, forgiveness. I just continued up the mountain with these nuns. Every time they'd stop at a Station of the Cross, I'd stop too and get down on my knees and pray with them. Still, the thunderstorm is still raging. I mean, it's completely wild, but they seem, almost oblivious to it. I mean, they were just joyous and going up the mountain and praying. So we finally got to the top of the mountain where the cross, this enormous concrete cross, stands, whose existence is itself a story. And I just had an overwhelming sense of a wish to pray that I never had before. So I got down on my knees and started praying with these nuns around me. And suddenly this young woman walked up to me who I hadn't seen before. But at the in the moment, I just assumed that she'd been with the nuns and I hadn't seen her. A very sweet, kind face. And she walked up and laid a cloth over my shoulders to keep me warm and dry. I was just very moved by her, but I exchanged a smile, but nothing was said. Then I went back and closed my eyes and began to pray again. And not that much time passed, really, although I must admit I sort of lost track of time, but I know it wasn't very much. I opened my eyes because I could feel sun, and I opened up and saw that the clouds were dispersing, the sun was coming through, and it was heating up really rapidly. And I looked around and saw that I was alone. The nuns were gone. And there was no young woman. There was no one. I thought, my first thought was, well, I don't know how, but I guess I didn't see them, go. And they must have started down the mountain. So I turned to run down the mountain after them. And at that time, I was a very athletic younger man. They were old ladies in skirts, so I figured I would catch them pretty quickly. And I went, but I never did. I ran all the way down the mountain. And I thought, it's impossible. So I actually climbed all the way back up the mountain, thinking that maybe they'd gone off, maybe I'd missed them somehow. They'd gone.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find them. And the only thing that sort of kept me, from thinking I had completely elucidated was that I had the cloth in my hand. So I went down, and there was a cafe at the bottom of the mountain, and I went in and asked the people, did you see a group of nuns? No, we haven't seen any. You're the only person who's gone up. And then I was really pretty shaken. So I laid the cloth on a rock at the bottom of the hill, still thinking, those are people. There's somebody, and they're going to come and get this. But I wasn't sure what I really thought. I went back into the village and began to ask, other people if they'd seen a group of nuns, French or Swiss or Belgian, maybe. Nobody had seen this group. So I was really wondering. I was immensely moved by what had happened. I knew something had really happened for me, but...
And I'd love to talk about that. We're just going to go to a quick break, but I'd love to know how that's changed your spiritual beliefs and the man that you are today. So we're going to take one quick break and then come back with some final thoughts from Randall Sullivan. We'll be right back.
Dream of being on The Amazing Race? Well, here's your chance. Grab a friend and prepare for an exhilarating race around the city when City Solve Urban Race comes to your city. Teams of two will solve clues and face fun challenges while racing around the city. The winning team gets $300 and a chance to be in the Las Vegas Championship race to compete for a grand prize of $5,000. Not only will you have a ton of fun, you'll also be helping a good cause. A portion of the proceeds will benefit a local charity. To start racing, go to CitySolveUrbanRace.com.
Welcome back, and I want to thank everyone for listening in today. We have Randall Sullivan here. He's written The Miracle Detective. He's the co-host of The Miracle Detective Show. Of course, if you'd like to learn more about the show, you can visit Oprah.com. And I encourage you to read The Miracle Detective, a fabulous book. And just before the break there, Randall, you were telling us about your personal experience in Bosnia and how you climbed that mountain and there was that horrendous storm of rain and thunder that just it did something for you being at that cross. And I'd love to know, how did that journey for you and being there, how did that change who you are today, and how did it change your spiritual beliefs?
Totally in some ways. And yet the same struggle that I have always had went on, but I saw it from a different perspective, as if I'd rounded a corner and really couldn't go back, but I kept looking back, thinking, am I doing the right thing? I mean, but it was too late. I'd already gone around the corner of belief. I think it helped me develop a lot of sympathy for other people's struggle with these sorts of experiences and the struggle that we all have with doubt. And I think I came to recognize that, you know, it's not bad to doubt. It's perfectly natural. And, you know, in a way, you have to make a friend of doubt in order to really strengthen your faith.
And you really do feel that you were guided there in some way, that you were meant to go there.
Absolutely. I felt it every step of the way. And it was only in the aftermath, because it's very easy to turn an experience like that of being guided, of having something so profound happen to you, into a way of thinking you're special. And, you know, I mean, the ego, you know, can starts to seep in, and you'd see it, and I'd see it in other people who would inflate an experience or have an experience, but turn it into something that made them, you know, special. And I could feel the danger of that, but I also felt the danger of, you know, turning your back on the experience and rejecting it. That seemed to me even the greater danger. And, you know, I mean, I also had to be willing to publicly embrace what had happened to me. You know, I knew there was going to be a considerable consequence for me professionally.
Sure.
I'd been working at Rolling Stone magazine for quite a few years, and my identity was very much invested in that. But what I'd experienced and what I was feeling about that experience just didn't fit in very well at Rolling Stone. Scorn for religion and spirituality is almost part of the fabric of the DNA of the publication. So, I knew that things were going to change for me, and that I didn't, maybe not, you know, on the surface for the better. I mean, it was going to cost me something in terms of my career, but even then I felt, you know, I'm not going to give up. I know that what happened to me was real, and I know it was the most important thing that ever has happened to me, and wherever it leads me, I'm just going to have to go.
How did your friends and your family react to you after this experience?
Well, my friends were accepting. I mean, none of my closest friends were or are, well, maybe in a couple of cases are now, but none were then, Christian. But they liked the change in me, and they saw that something good had happened, and they were, you know, pretty supportive. For my family, it was more uncomfortable, because it was as if by, you know, becoming, quote, spiritual or religious, I was somehow rejecting the family or turning my back on where I'd come from. And to some degree, I think they took that personally and were hurt and it created some awkward moments. But I hope we're working it out. But none of they remain, you know, pretty steadfast in their unbelief, and still see me as, you know, having gone off the deep end.
But for you, you feel a new sense of freedom in your life for having that experience.
I certainly felt it at the beginning, and, you know, then it sort of turned into a feeling of responsibility, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt as if I have to do something with it for other
mm-hmm.
people. And when the book came out, I wasn't prepared for the response I'd get, you know, from other people. I mean, every week, you know, someone writes to tell me, you know, this book changed my life. And on the one hand, you love to hear it. On the other hand, you know, you feel the weight of having had that kind of an effect on people, and, you know, a responsibility, and also it's like it's cemented me more into this way of being, and you know, sent me further down that path. So it's a mixed blessing, but then all blessings are.
And so it's led you on quite a journey, because certainly through the show you've, you know, investigated a lot of miracles, and you've gotten to connect you know, with a lot of people who share some of that with you. And so I think you can understand where they're coming from. You know, it is a responsibility when something like that happens to you, and you do think, you know, why is this happening to me? So I think it's wonderful that you've shared your story with the world and that they feel safe to you and talk about their journeys as well.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that you have a new book coming out, actually, on the life and death of Michael Jackson. What can you tell us about that?
Well, it began, actually, it was the last thing that I ever started for Rolling Stone. They called me 2 days after Michael died and said, would you, do you want to do the big piece on Michael Jackson? And at the time I thought, well, no, not really. Why me? I'm not a Michael Jackson fan. I've never written about Michael Jackson. But I thought, well, okay, I mean, I wanted to mend fences with Rolling Stone, to be quite honest. So I said yes. And but almost immediately I began to have, you know, experiences of Michael that I found, you know, utterly compelling, and decided, no, I have to do this as a book. And I mean, I could tell you what those are, and some of them were, I would say, spiritual in nature.
Wow.
But
we're looking forward to it, that's for sure. So probably sometime next year?
It's scheduled to come out later this year.
Okay. Well, Randall, I want to thank you so much for joining me on the show today. It's been a wonderful honor to chat with you, and I want to wish you the best of luck with your new book and with the show and everything.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. And if you want to learn more about Randall Sullivan or his show, The Miracle Detectives, again, you can visit oprah.com/OWN. And if you'd like to learn of Randall's journey that he was talking about today and the sightings of the Virgin Mary, certainly pick up his book, The Miracle Detective, just a fascinating book that is very hard to put down. You can even pick it up online at amazon.com. And I want to thank everyone for tuning in today. We'll see you back here next week when I'll have Dan Millman, the Peaceful Warrior, with us talking about his latest book. Have a great week, and we will see you next Thursday for another Everyday Miracles.
You've been listening to Everyday Miracles with Candace McClain, opening your mind to unlimited possibilities. Tune in Thursdays at 2 p.m. Pacific and 5 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com for Everyday Miracles, where a new path full of miracles is just waiting to be discovered.